321. Stay tuned now for Coast Range Radio.
From the Coast Range Association, this is Coast Range Radio. I'm Michael Gaskill. So I'm recording this on November 9th. I feel like I need to timestamp this intro for reasons that should be pretty obvious, as we all collectively live through the unfolding trauma of the 2024 election results. I'm going to share a conversation I had yesterday with two of my colleagues in the climate justice world that I found really helpful in starting to process what this election could mean for climate justice and our movement, and how to engage in these early stages. First, though, I hope you'll indulge me as I share a few of my initial feelings. Okay, deep breath. I have to admit, right up top, I am really struggling, and I'm not here today to put on a brave face and tell anyone that it's going to be okay. We have a long, dark road ahead of us. I think it's okay to feel whatever feelings come up. I also think it's important to explore those feelings and go beneath our surface reaction. For example, when I'm not feeling completely numb or in denial, my primary feelings in the past few days have just been rage and a deep sense of hopelessness and despair. But underneath those emotions is sadness and grief for all that we've lost and stand to lose, all the needless suffering and division and toxicity that is to come. For me, that sadness and grief is so much more difficult to sit with than anger. And don't get me wrong, I think anger at this situation in this moment is entirely justified. But anger leads so easily to division and destruction and hatred and othering. And our world has seen so much of that, more than enough. What our world needs now is healing and mending. I came into activism through anger and fear at the status quo, at the system. And those were great initial motivators. Over time, though, I've found that those kinds of emotions are like the sugar or simple carbs of activism. They metabolize quickly, give you a quick burst of energy, and then you crash. And worse yet, they leave you all blocked up inside, if you know what I mean. More and more, I try to ground my organizing in empathy, compassion, and a spirit of solidarity. I want to be clear that while I believe that organizing grounded in these values is a good in and of itself, I also believe it is strategically wise. I also want to be clear that compassion and empathy doesn't mean that we won't fight like hell as hard and fiercely as we have to when our communities, human and otherwise, are under attack. On a very practical level, there are lessons to be learned here. But I ask that we all approach this with humility towards our own priors and skepticism towards anyone with an overly simple story, people who traffic in cynicism, or anyone whose narrative just so happens to align with their pet issue or their biggest grievances. Our world is complex and chaotic. A huge swath of people are totally checked out of politics, just getting whatever ambiently comes to them through parasitic algorithms, and our media landscape makes it hard to find credible information, even for those of us who actively seek it out. And as we discuss later, there is a massive, inflation-driven, anti-incumbent wave sweeping through democracies across the world that crosses all ideological divides. Again, we need to learn lessons from this, and we need to learn them quickly. But let's do it in good faith, and let's focus on moving forward together. Okay, if you're still listening, thank you so much. I'm going to wrap this up with a quote that really gives me strength right now. And actually, it is a major paraphrase. I can't find the original quote, but I think you'll get the meaning. Our task is not to move the boulder. Our task is to push. The boulder is certainly too large for any one person to move, and it may prove to be too much for even the millions of us who are pushing. We may be crushed by the boulder no matter how hard we push, no matter what strategies we devise, no matter how many of us work together. But if we don't push, we can be certain that it will crush us. So let's push the hell out of that boulder together. If you find this show helpful or unhelpful, or if you just want to let me know what's on your mind, please email me anytime at michael@coastrange.org. And please consider sharing or recommending this show to other folks in your circle. Coast Range Radio is on all podcast apps, on community radio stations throughout Oregon, and at coastrange.org. For our radio listeners, you can find an extended version of this conversation on our Coast Range Radio podcast feed, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the places. Okay, let's get to the guests. I'm joined today by Brenna Bell from 350PDX and Forest Climate Alliance organizer Alex Budd. And quick disclaimer, this conversation does not necessarily represent the views of any of our respective organizations. Okay, well, Alex and Brenna, thank you so much for joining me today. And this is just the beginning of this conversation, but it does feel really important that we take some time right now while we're feeling raw, while we're feeling these emotions, while we don't know what exactly lays ahead of us, to, I think, be transparent with each other and with our audience about where we're at, share some feelings. If we have hope, great. If we don't have hope right now, that's also okay right now. So, and also, Brenna, you were saying right before we started recording that you wanted to start us off with a remembrance. So
yeah, it's been a challenging week. I think for many people in the Oregon conservation community and beyond, we were just, I don't know what the word is, shocked to hear that longtime conservation advocate Bob Salinger passed away on Halloween. He was working late in his office when his amazing heart gave out on him. And like, I've known Bob for many years in a professional capacity, and I knew he did a lot, but in the remembrances of him and in the things I've been reading, I wasn't quite aware how much he was caring and how much he was still caring all at once. And bless his heart, literally, for holding together for so long with the load that he carried. But he was everywhere. I mean, anyone who's worked with him or been the focus of his campaigns or ire knows that Bob would not let up. He was the best person to have on your side in a fight because he was a tireless advocate for the wild places and the critters in Oregon. Like, I'm still feeling really sad. I think it'll... I don't think I'll stop for a long time because I'm just looking forward to this future, right? This even more uncertain future when voices like Bob's would be so important. And there's just a huge gap that it will take many of us to fill, and even then incompletely. So I just wanted to just say a huge thank you to him and all his work. And yeah, this is an amazing time for the rest of us to step up and carry forward Bob's legacy in his work, and just be so grateful that we got to work with someone with such a heart.
Well, I'm really glad that you got to work with him. And it is important that we remember these folks that gave so much of themselves to help our world. And so my public service announcement right now is don't give of yourself tirelessly. Take rest and reach out to folks around you. You know, we need people here for the long haul. So we need to take care of each other.
Agreed. Be tired and then sleep.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then wake up and keep fighting.
Yeah. Should we move on to the happy news?
The other cheering news ahead of us.
Yeah. Yeah. Could I just get a quick gut check of how you all are feeling? And again, we do not need to be putting on a brave face right now. If you feel brave, if you feel hopeful, that's great. But I think, you know, I'm trying to be open and transparent right now with where I'm at. So I'd love to just hear you all's initial thoughts, and then I do have some specific questions.
Well, okay, lots of things. First of all, I haven't felt hopeful in a long time. I mean, I'll just put that right out there. If hopeful means like somehow things are just going to get better, that's not a realm that I really occupy. And so the election, it's complicated because there's part of me that is absolutely heartbroken that so many people choose a path of division and repression and othering. But we already knew that was true. So what I'm not feeling is surprised, right? Like I think back in 2016, when Trump won the first time, I felt surprised. I felt immense grief then. I was like, how could my country do this? Didn't we turn the corner and go in a better direction? And so now it's just confirming that we never have really moved away from one of the roots of this country, which is based in white supremacy and patriarchy and colonization. And that thread is alive and well, and gathering steam, gathering more people to it, right? So that is true. It's not shocking. It's just heartbreaking that is still true. And then there's another part of me that's honestly like, just really curious to see what's about to happen, because I'm not the hugest fan of the federal government. I think there's a lot of us like on the left who aren't, honestly, and have wondered what would happen if there was a massive disruption to it. This is not the disruption. Like the values behind this disruption are not the values that I share. Like make that very clear. And like there will be really hard things because of this. People's lives are going to be very materially impacted in ways that we don't yet know. And at the same time, like if Kamala Harris won, like A, I'd be thrilled to have a woman as president and a woman of color as president. Like that's true. But also the American imperial project is a problem and people wouldn't be rising up. They'd be like, I mean, people on the left we'd like be like, oh, yay, we can relax a little bit longer while our government keeps doing what it did through the Biden administration, through the Obama administration, which is a lot of really bad stuff for the earth and people. So it's complicated. Like I'm not in a state of just like abject grief. I'm in this state of like, well, wow, we're still that racist and sexist. Like that's still true. And like, what the heck's about to happen? And how can we be best positioned to fill in the cracks that are about to be made?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It all makes sense. It all makes sense right now because none of it makes sense. Yeah, I have maybe a couple thoughts to bounce off of that. And I do want to get into that last point, but Alex, how are you feeling?
I mean, a mix of things also. I think it's hard to overstate, like, or even for us to fully appreciate at this point, like what the like longer term consequences are going to be, like just as far as climate change. Like obviously Kamala Harris was not going to like, even if a Democrat had won, there was no like, we're going to have a just transition in the next 4 years. Like that was never on the ballot. That was never going to happen as a result of this election. But just thinking about, you know, the unwinding of like the kind of breadcrumbs, good climate policy that we've been able to achieve federally over the last few years is going to have huge consequences. And also just like the amount of capital over the next 4 years that is probably going to be sunk into new LNG projects and terminals and new, you know, oil wellheads and coal mines and things that, you know, once those things are built, they're so hard to turn off. Just to give a sense of like the scale of impact and consequence potentially on the climate front. But I don't know, like Brenna said, I'm also not surprised. I mean, around the overdeveloped Western world, incumbent governments have been falling left and right over the last year. And so this is largely in keeping with that. And in a sense, it's that like that story of progress and growth and greater prosperity that tomorrow will be better than today. That's not a story that is resonating or like holding weight for people. And the politicians who are able to make political capital this moment are those that can make a compelling case to people that they alone can restore those broken promises. And they do that by appealing to the past. I mean, we know those promises would never be able to be kept. They were always founded on violence and, you know, environmental degradation and injustice. But yeah, I think this election shows that those like appeals for simple solutions to complex problems and those voices are still ascendant.
I really appreciate what you two have to say there, and I think it resonates a lot with me and a lot of other listeners. Right now, we're recording in early November, so we have a couple months to start preparing our movement. And we don't know what's coming our way exactly. We don't know the exact nature of the threat. Will it just be really bad, or will it be apocalyptic? We just, you know, I would say that's probably the spectrum that we're looking at. But if either of you have any thoughts or feelings on how you think about centering like our core values and principles as we start to try to build back up this resistance effort.
I have ideas. I've actually this week, I started thinking about the Tea Party movement that really took off in the early years of the first Obama administration, and how the right started doing really locally based populist organizing. And I don't agree with I don't agree with what they were organizing around, but I appreciate their tactics. And I would love to see us move forward doing local organizing around those values. Obviously, we have a different political theory, but I think that local, getting back to the roots, getting back to local organizing, build populist momentum has to be the way. And then if the federal government really comes down hard on resistors, we have those networks in place that we will need in these times, because local networks are the most resilient thing that you can have. And local relationships also cut across party lines. Having lived rurally a lot of my life, like, I knew all my neighbors, and I might not disagree with them on everything, but I also knew they had my back for things. And so, like, getting people out and actually meeting each other again and interacting again and seeing each other as people, I think is vitally important.
Before we move on, one of the reasons I was asking that question is because we're all just guessing right now. And so to me, it feels really important to set down some markers around where we are as we try to hold the line, because clearly we're going to be on defense here. What I saw during the first term was it was so easy to get lost kind of in like the tidal wave of badness and scandal and garbage and actually bad policy too, and then just crazy tweets, right? And so I guess my advice to myself and maybe to others is to try to tune out as much of the noise as possible and just focus on the organizing, obviously, that we're doing, but focus on the policies, right? Don't focus on the words, the insane things that are said. Like, we have to keep our eyes on the prize here. So one thing that could come out of this is a lot of federal government overreach and aggression into what has previously been state-level policy, right? And I was just on the phone with Mark Gamba, Representative Mark Gamba, asking whether elected leaders in Oregon have been planning around that. And he said he didn't think that they have been, at least not adequately, at least not yet. What do you all think that we need to do as a movement? What do we need to be demanding of our elected officials to be preparing for that kind of, you know, Trump has promised to send the military into the streets to arrest and potentially shoot protesters. I personally think we need to be demanding of our elected officials and expecting that they will put safeguards in place, and that they will not go along. And because I can guarantee you, yeah, we will hear stirring words from elected officials in Oregon about resistance. But what we need to demand is stirring actions and policies.
Well, I mean, one thing I'm kind of in relation to that I'm concerned about or foresee, and kind of, again, in reflection to how things went the first Trump term, was, I think, especially people within large, powerful institutions, there's kind of a normalcy bias, or like a desire to see Trump as like a unique aberration. It's like, it's this one wild guy, and things will get back to normal. I could see state leaders across the country hoping that, you know, this will blow over eventually, and then things will get back to normal. And I think that's the risk with a liberal populist leaders in particular that we've seen, is that, you know, when they say they're going to break the rules and change the rules and break the system, not believing them puts us on the back foot. Yeah, I think that's a danger. So I think that's something to like be diligent about holding them accountable to and pushing them on.
How would you recommend listeners engage in this moment of such dramatic uncertainty?
I think letting go of old maps that aren't accurate anymore. I think when we're faced with uncertainty, we try and, you know, manage that by finding a way to make sense of the situations we find ourselves in. Like that, I think the ground is kind of shifting beneath our feet and it no longer matches the maps that we've had in the past. And so being wary about, you know, when are we projecting, you know, how we've made sense of things in the past onto the present moment, because it probably doesn't align anymore in the same ways. But yeah, and kind of going back to what you were saying, I think there's going to be a lot of noise. I think the next few years are going to feel like a sense of just an unending series of crises and emergencies and things you need to rush to try and put out this fire and that fire. And I think it's easy as a result of that for like different movements and struggles to get fractured and split. So in that sense, I think we're going to need a really broad front. I mean, that's always the way that people have most successfully resisted far right and fascist movements, is by building a broad front of solidarity. And that's going to be more needed than ever, especially in the face of like stronger government repression, the kinds of things that Trump and fans have talked about.
And I want to just add to your wonderful list, Alex, really asking people to be good to one another. Something that's been true on the left and in radical circles for a while is a lot of the angst and pain that we have experienced at the hands of this system we direct towards each other. And we hold each other to unreachable perfection in our behavior. If we see each other as like gloriously broken people moving together towards justice, rather than focusing our ire and division on people who are almost, you know, so much our allies, or like focusing on the one piece of disagreement we have with other people on the left rather than coming together to fight the bigger problems. So that's an invitation, because we don't need to be smaller and smaller as a movement. We need to be bigger and bigger. We need to draw people in, be a welcoming, exciting place where people can learn transformational growth throughout their mistakes. And that's just my invitation to, yeah, have grace for ourselves, have grace for each other, because this is the long fight, and we need everyone that we can to fight against what, not just what is coming, but what's already here.
Yeah, that was beautiful. Thank you. So, Brenna, you already said you don't feel a lot of hope, and that's okay. But I'm going to ask the question in this way anyway. What, if anything, is giving either of you, or both of you, I should say, hope or solace, at least, in this moment?
Yeah, I'll start. Yeah, I had a crisis of hope like 20 years ago.
Sure.
But what I lean into, Michael, is love. And then I act out of my love. And And that is really easy to just regenerate all the time. I mean, there are so many things that I love. And every time I can tap into one of them, and then also the things that hurt them, the things that I love, like that renews my desire to act. You know, I kind of call it the fierce mama bear form of activism. Like, don't get in between me and the thing that I love, right? Or I'm going to come at you. So that, like, I mean, right now, honestly, it's the fall leaves. Like this week in Oregon, in the sunshine and the fall leaves, like I've been getting immense solace. And so that's what I just lean back into, is the earth is filled with wonder and magic and mystery and spontaneity and joy. And like, don't get between me and that. I'm going to come for you. Like that's my approach to activism, kind of what keeps me going.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about it more, like tuning in a bit more to the implications of the election around climate stuff for the future. And and it gets helpful to remember also, for me at least, that people are born into the ending of worlds. That's a thing that happens. Many worlds have ended before, and many times and places, and we're still here. And even in the midst of that, there's always still beauty, and new things can come out of those ruins. So how do we leave the best ruins that we can, even if we're not hopeful about, you know, preserving the larger structures in the same way?
Yeah. How do we be really good ancestors for the people who are going to come next? You know, like there will be people. They will be doing something. And like, what leg up can we give them from our work right now?
Yeah.
And staying open to like the mystery of the world, which feels like kind of the other side of like the beauty as like a source of motivation, or I don't know, an ability to keep going, is not succumbing to the sense of certainty that we know how any of these stories end, which doesn't mean like believing that it's all going to work out in any way, but like we don't know how things will unfold.
I'll throw in one more thing, and that is Oregon, people on this land have already gone through an apocalypse. You know, like when 80 to 90% of your population dies of disease, and then settlers come and take your land and take your language and take your children. Like, this isn't that bad comparatively. Learning from indigenous communities how they survived in the worst situations, like, you know, and I'm an inheritor of the privilege that led to their destruction. And now revitalization, 7 generations later, right? There's an indigenous resurgence. And so I think we need to keep in perspective when we're talking about like how bad things are, how bad they can be, like, oh my goodness, like the historical context of apocalypse, it's been like way worse than this in this place where we are now on stolen land. And so just like thinking about, yeah, getting a grip, getting some context for what's going on for people, like, this is the worst thing that's ever happened. Like, no, really. There are other things that we can learn from people were the survivors, and how they survived and how they have turned that survival into revival. Like, that's also there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I will say that for me, something that has given me, if not hope, but solace, is a podcast by a Buddhist teacher named Tara Brach. I'm not a Buddhist, but she's motivated by the kind of spirituality that says, go out and work for social justice, don't retreat into spirituality. I found it really, really helpful. Okay, well, thank you all so much. This is the beginning of the conversation in the dark times, but as you both have said, things have been darker and the future is unwritten. And I will say that, Brenna's repudiation of hope aside, my conversation with you both has left me more hopeful than I was before we started talking. And again, hope in that sense of the possibility of positive change if we work for it. So thank you both for joining me, and let's get ready for this fight.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks, Alex.
Thank you.
And that's it for this episode of Coast Range Radio. Coast Range Radio is a production of the Coast Range Association. The music today was created by yours truly, and you can find more of my music at theroadsodas.com. Again, if you like our show, please help us grow our audience and send this show to your friends. Recommend it to your friends. And please consider supporting our work by subscribing to the Coast Range Association newsletter at coastrange.org. My email is michael@coastrange.org. Remember, our task is not to move the boulder, our task is to push. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in a couple weeks.
You know, on a really dark night, even in the North Carolina mountains, you might be able to pick up KBOO, Community Radio, coming to you from Portland, Oregon. This is SciCon coming to you from Charlotte, North Carolina, supporting Community Radio, radio that works for all of us.
tuned to listener-supported community radio KBOO, Portland, Oregon, in the beautiful Willamette Valley.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Development and Events Committee meets on the third Monday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
We are kicked by police. We have no employment rights. You can be put in jail for holding hands with your lovers in practically half the states of the United States. And